From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Greetings, deplorables, and welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys Basket. I am your host, Mr. Hunter Dusing, and joining me is deplorable Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu, down in Australia.
Hello, fellow deplorables.
And welcome also in Colorado, the Colorado Basket, John Grace. Say hello, John.
Deplorable greetings and salutations.
Yes, and also with us is Pepe the Frog. Say hello, Pepe. Oh, Pepe can't talk. He's a cartoon. Okay.
Right.
That would be Johnny Lyon, I think.
Yeah. Oh, shit. You know, now this show's going to go to shit, Stu.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, yeah, I said those. I invoked those words like the Candyman.
Yes, it is. That's what it is.
He's the white Tony Todd.
Yeah. And this is an episode where we're going to do a movie about the Rodrigo Duterte biopic, Jaws 2.
No, that's For Your Heart Only, the Wing Wing movie.
Actually, that's more accurate.
Yeah.
Wing Wing, I think, kills as many people as Duterte's killed in that movie. I think the body counts are comparable.
The only thing about that Wing Wing film is the same bad guys get shot over and over throughout the movie. It's like they said they haven't got enough bad guys, so they just keep getting more. And because it wasn't my words, but somebody said because they all look the same, no one's going to really know.
Oh, terrible.
Well,
terrible.
Not my words. That's why
deplorable.
That's why I emphasize. Deplorable.
Deplorable, Stu. Deplorable.
Just excuse me as well if I go off on a 4-minute coughing rant. I'm just feeling sorry for Hillary.
Not. No, Stuart's got a flu and pneumonia at the same time.
Yeah, I plan to. I did something Hillary couldn't do. I managed to get to my car and not faint.
And you know, Teddy Roosevelt got shot in the chest and gave a speech. Just saying. Anyway, but yeah, Stuart. Stuart has the same illness. Stuart's going to go talk to a little girl while he has pneumonia too. Anyway. But the movie we're doing is a sequel to a beloved movie. It's a beloved movie with many sequels that are never talked about. The one we're going to talk about is Jaws 2, starring Roy Scheider and Rodrigo Duterte as the shark.
This is going to seem a pretty odd choice. People are going to go, why are you guys covering Jaws 2?
It's just because
not something that we're really known for is covering mainstream horror or mainstream films, you know, especially ones that are sequels to a film as big as Jaws. So, I'm going to go for a little tangent. First, I want to go for a little tangent about I watched Kiss Rocks Vegas, the new Kiss home video. And very good. Very, very good concert. I was thoroughly impressed with it. But I got to say, one thing that shitted me watching it, and this was not Kiss's fault for once, the amount of people holding phones up throughout the course.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. Am I missing something about why people hold up phones when they've paid 50 or 100 bucks to a concert? What am I missing here? Why am I not doing it and everybody else is?
I always just snap like a couple pictures, but that's it. Like, I just take a picture and then I watch the show, you know?
John, was that a problem when you went to, or a common thing when you went and saw the Misfits last week?
Yeah, it was everywhere. People just left
it had to be. Everybody wants to record it and put it.
Well, there's like 50 different accounts on YouTube that have posted videos from their handheld phones. They were posted within an hour of the show.
They've gone for their own gratification. They get YouTube hits, yet they've missed the show by holding a fucking phone up. It's just, I don't get it. It's odd. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just so moved. Maybe I'm just not moving with the times. I don't know. But when I went and saw The Darkness a couple of years back, I did this really strange thing of just watching the band and enjoying the show without holding
your phone
up.
It's really hard to I don't see the enjoyment of watching it through your phone. It's, you know, it just seems like jerking off. I don't know.
Yeah, it never sounds that good anyway. Like, I went to see Butch Walker the other night, and the crowd was mostly people my age. And maybe 3-4 people were holding up phones. So that tells you the disparity in age and the intent of doing this. And it was a packed, you know, it was a pretty packed theater.
I wish
but,
it was,
but everybody was over 40. Everybody was over 40, it looked like.
Yeah. So I wish a band would have the balls to say, sorry, no recording throughout the course of the show.
Well, you know, Danzig has a history of doing that. Obviously, couldn't do that at a festival, but at Danzig shows, there are often signs up that say no cell phones. Yeah. Like,
well, that's out. Good. That's a good approach.
Yeah, it is. It is good. And you know, inevitably, there's some asshole who goes at Danzig with a phone. Danzig will, like, I remember there was this guy who went at him with a phone, and Danzig like grabbed him and like attacked him, and it's on the, you know, it's on the internet. You can watch it, but. And everybody was like, oh, what an asshole. And I was like, no, that guy fucking deserved it. He was going there looking to start shit, and he got hit, you know?
Yeah. That's why he did it. It was because that guy at the, whatever that band, the Northside Kings and Arizona, knocked him out. Yeah. And so he was better known for that video than anything else for a couple of years.
Nobody would know who the Northside Kings are if.
No, not at all. Together. Yeah, they're nothing. It's just a fat guy that slugged out Danzig. Big deal.
But no, like Danzig's one who does that because he hates technology, you know.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, no. But I mean,
applaud
I see
him
it all
for
the
it.
Time it shows.
Yeah, I applaud him for it. Just, you know, that would be, if I was in the band, that would be my approach. I'm sorry, no videoing during the show. You know, I mean, I don't want to go to a show as a spectator and have some idiot in front of me with his or her arm up blocking my view.
Yeah.
I don't want it. I'm not paying. I'm not paying good money for that.
It's annoying, and plus, like, people are never discreet about it. They always hold their phone up to get the best angle, and it blocks other people's views. Like, when I snap a picture, I try to do it in a way that's not going to put my viewfinder in front of someone.
Another thing I hate as well is crowd surfing. That is the most stupidest practice. I absolutely hate it.
It just looks like a good way to, like, get a brain aneurysm, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it does become near me. I will say it now. I'm not going to hide it. Every person who crowd surfs, and if they bump me or kick me with a leg, I literally fucking hit them. I'll punch them in the back, in the head. I'm not there for that. I'm there to watch the band or the artist. There's no need for that shit. Stage diving as well. Best stage dive I ever saw, I've got to say, was a guy years ago at a punk gig in, God, it had to be like 87, I think it was, 86. And he's jumped on stage to a band called... was it Gash or Depression, one or the other? I can't remember. And he's jumped on stage. He's gone on a stage dive. And just like fucking Moses with the Red Sea, everyone just walked out of the way. He's gone and smacked his head straight on the floor.
It's like the first scene in School of Rock.
That happened to Iggy Pop in Huntsville, Alabama.
Oh, really?
when he was on the, I think it was called the Roar Festival. It was sponsored by a chewing tobacco company. And apparently in Huntsville, they weren't really used to stage diving or Iggy's type of show. Yeah. And they kind of just the crowd parted, and Iggy landed on the ground and just dislocated his shoulder. And it was mentioned on a Howard Stern show, and he was like, after Robin read him the news, he was like, somebody needs to tell Iggy he's 60. Ooh.
Yeah, trying to replicate that famous concert back in the Stooges, you know, it's a little tough these days, Iggy.
He's going to bust out the peanut butter and, you know.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. But, yeah. I mean... He had to catch Iggy when I saw him in Boston because he kept stage diving.
Yeah.
So that was kind of his thing. And he's only like, I mean, 5'3", probably. Yeah. 100 pounds.
What's Iggy's show like? Good?
It's great. He's terrific live.
Figured as much.
I mean, I'd even see him now. He's just amazing live on stage. I don't care what Paul Stanley wrote in his book, you know, about how he said the Stooges were terrible or whatever. It's like, yeah, you know what? I pull out Funhouse and the first Stooges album a lot more than anything Paul Stanley ever did. So,
and the new Iggy album I think is great.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And the last Stooges album that they did for Fat Possum Records I thought was good.
It is really good. I went back and listened to it when the new Iggy came out, And I was like, that album was good. And I put it on and I was like, oh, yeah.
It was still good. Way better than the one they did with Steve Albini.
That was a piece of shit.
I traded mine in. I still
Yeah, the whack, no, the terrible, weirdness.
The weirdness. That was bad.
Yeah,
but the second one, the next one they did, their last album, that
Ready to Die.
Stooges. Yeah, I think it was Ron Ashton that passed away. I don't think you're going to get another Stooges record. But yeah, the last one was terrific.
Yeah.
Proof that old guys can rock out.
Of course they can, for God's sake. This bullshit sort of way of thinking that, oh man, this guy's over 30, so he's past his time. Piss off.
Yeah.
Well, and I think
break.
And I think you're seeing less of that thinking because so many of these bands are so old now, these legacy acts, and they're still playing. But you go to those shows and there's tons of young people there. Like, I went to see Black Sabbath, and there was, you know, people of all ages there, even little kids, you know. Like, one of my students in class, I was like, I mentioned something about music, and he goes, do you know when, just out of nowhere, he goes, do you know when Black Sabbath's playing? And I said, Wednesday. Immediately, and he goes, I got to get tickets.
Now, there were a lot of young people at the Misfits show, like, huge crowd of them.
Oh, I'm sure. The Misfits.
Not a ton of old people. And, I mean, it's just weird because one of the bands opening before the Misfits was Bad Religion, and I remember that pretentious singer had always done interviews dismissing punk acts that were touring past the age of 50. And here their old asses were up on stage with all their white gray hair.
No, I know.
Still singing these songs for like they're still skateboarders in the 70s. And
I know. I'm a big fan of the Descendants, but they all look like suburban dads now.
Yeah, exactly. it's just laughable.
But the Descendants have always kind of been like, hey, we're uncool. So
right, they're squares.
Yeah, they've never acted like they were ever hip.
any band playing that skate punk music, it's got a very limited shelf life for them. I mean, in your early mid 20s, you can get away with it. As you were saying about the Descendants in their 50s, it looks pretty dumb, really.
Yeah.
It's like all those bands in the 90s, they called them punk bands. I just called them fast pop bands, really, with bands like Guttermouth and NoFX.
Descendants were around in the 80s, like in the hardcore scene.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but those bands from that 90s wave were just, really, where are they now? Apart from probably NoFX.
A lot of them are, like Blink 182 just did a tour that was huge. You know, some of them that went away for a while have come back.
Yeah, I'm sort of dismissing Blink 182 and Green Day. They got big. Okay, I'm talking about the lower.
They did. They were next level.
The stuff that was on sort of Fat Records, all those lower indie labels is the bands I'm talking of. It's got a low shelf life,
Well, just like skating,
Rollerblade. What about rollerblade metal?
Oh man,
inline skates metal. We need to make an inline skates metal band.
Yeah.
Those things, remember those inline skates that lasted for like 5 minutes?
Oh, yeah, I had them.
So did I.
Yeah. Razor Scooter Punk.
Razor Scooter Punk? I think we need to start a new subgenre, gentlemen.
Yeah,
where's that scene?
Yeah, the Razor Scooter Punks.
That's my scene, man.
Yeah.
Dress up like mods, get on Razor Scooters.
Well, what about moped metal?
All right. Oh.
I think, isn't that like Wilco or something?
Probably.
Ain't metal. Need to have like a thrash metal band that just come out in mopeds. Sort of pissing on Rob Halford coming out in Harley.
Yeah.
Just come out on an old moped. All right.
What about, what are those things called that cops ride? Oh, Segway. Segway metal.
Oh, yeah.
Like Paul Blart Mall Cop metal.
Yeah.
Totally. Awesome.
What happened to that guy who invented the Segway? He fell off a cliff.
He drove it off a cliff.
Really?
Yeah, he did.
Because I remember he boasted like it was going to change the world or whatever. And then they rolled it out. It's just the Segway.
It made law enforcement look totally non-threatening.
I remember when Hunter got pulled over by a cop in Memphis on a Segway back in 2011. He goes,
was he on a Segway? Were you in the car for that?
I was in the car. Me, you, and Susan. The car. Yeah.
And was he on a Segway or did he had one nearby?
He had one nearby. That's right. Yeah.
He didn't like roll up on me on one though.
Hunter's blasting his metal. Like, dude, turn it down. There's a cop there. Don't blast metal. Just He goes, turn the music down.
Oh, my God. And but, like, he came up and he was like, hey, what was that sign over there? What did it say to do? And I was like, it said to do this. What'd you do? I didn't do that. And he goes, okay, move along.
That's right.
And I was like, I'm grateful he just wanted to test his stand-up act and not actually punish me.
Yes.
Good thing you weren't playing NWA.
Yeah.
Or Screwdriver.
Yes.
Yeah. What powerful England. All right, let's move on to Jaws 2. We've had our rant, I dare say.
Yes. So Jaws 2, directed by Jeanette Zwark.
As good a pronunciation as any. Yeah, I would improvise.
The director of such movies as Super
Bug.
Bug. Not the William Friedkin Bug.
The early Bug, which is actually about killer bugs.
Yes.
It's what everybody wanted the William Friedkin Bug to be about. Yeah.
And the Christopher Reeve classic Somewhere in Time.
Yeah. Actually, a lot of people will tell you that's their favorite movie.
Yeah, that's not a bad movie, actually.
Yeah.
But gone on to do a lot of TV, did a bunch of episodes of, like, Smallville, Heroes, Supernatural, Grey's Anatomy, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Fringe.
I actually liked Bug when I was a kid, when NBC played it. I thought it was a fun monster movie. Fire-breathing
rock. So, William Castle production.
Yeah.
But yeah, as the follow-up to Steven Spielberg's blockbuster, it's Richard D. Zanuck producing. It stars Roy Scheider, John Williams on the musical score. And so when did you guys first see this movie?
1978, when it came out, my friend.
Really?
At the drive-in, yeah. Probably the first movie I can remember actually seeing. I do remember seeing... when I was in hospital, probably age 3 or so, seeing a Columbo episode on TV with because I wouldn't sleep, and the nurse brought me out and sat me on her lap. I'm like, this is nice. I'm watching a Columbo movie. Which one? I don't know. But yeah, first experience I've ever gone to. Like, we went. I may have mentioned before in the past, our family went to the drive-in a lot. I mean, a lot. And yeah, 78. Jaws 2 played along with Jaws. Jaws played first, and the main feature was obviously Jaws 2. So, that was when I first saw it.
What about you, John?
I saw it in 1979 on HBO, probably a dozen times.
And I'll bet this was a frequent flyer on HBO.
Oh, yeah. In 79, it was. It was their big movie that summer because it was a huge hit, like, other than Grease and Superman the Movie. I would say this was probably the other big hit of 78.
Yeah, I mean, because the Jaws sequels are pretty largely forgotten now. But it was a big moneymaker at the time. I mean, because they made Jaws 3 and Jaws the Revenge.
Saw all those at the theater as well when they dropped.
I did see those in the theater.
Unfortunately, I saw Jaws the Revenge. That was a pile of shit. 3 I enjoyed. Like I said... Recently, I just watched the 3D Blu-ray of it, and I had a lot of fun with it. Movie good? No.
But, no.
No. I can't even defend the movie being good. It's not. But it was a lot of fun to watch, but Jaws of Avengers is hideous.
Was it Michael Caine famously said about that movie? Did you, when you saw the script for Jaws the Revenge, did you see the movie that you were in? And he goes, no, but I saw the house it bought me.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think he won an Oscar and he was filming Jaws the Revenge.
Yes, he actually couldn't collect it because he was filming it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for Hannah and Her Sisters, was it?
Yeah, I think it was. And they announced it at the Oscars that he was in the Bahamas filming Jaws 4. And I think people thought it was a joke, and it was true.
But this is a direct sequel to the first movie. It's got Roy Scheider back as Chief Brody.
Yeah.
You've got Lorraine Gray as Ellen Brody. You've got Murray Hamilton back as Crooked Mayor Larry Vaughn.
Yes.
And we also have a frequent companion of Roy Scheider, Keith Gordon, who played young Roy Scheider in All That Jazz. Yep, just fun fact. I saw Keith Gordon. I was like, geez, well, he keeps popping up in these Roy Scheider movies.
This is his first film.
Was it?
Yes. And one of the other awkward teens was one of the Van Zant brothers, like Stephen Van Zant's little Stephen Van Zant's brother.
Oh, who
married,
really?
Who married Adrienne Barbeau?
Oh my god!
And had twin, I think twins with her, and she was like 51.
Oh my god! So it's after John Carpenter.
Oh yeah, yeah, long after John Carpenter. It's funny, like these people in the industry in 78, because Halloween was a hit, I think, in 78 as well.
Well, I thought it was 79 that it came out.
Well, what happened with Halloween was it flopped when they released it in 78. And then they re-released it with a new, I think, a new promotion, you know, campaign. And also, they had a lot of critic reviews.
Yeah, they pushed the critical reviews.
Yeah, they pushed the critic raves. And it was pushed harder in 79, and then it was a hit. Then it took off and did really well.
Okay.
It did have a flop release in 78. But it was on – it's funny because I think it was a hit in theaters in 79. It was probably on HBO that fall or something and doing big on cable. But it was a hit in theaters in 79. Yeah, but back then you could re-release a movie with a new campaign and give it another go-round and it could make money. Nowadays you can't do that.
No.
If it doesn't do well in that opening weekend, it's fucked.
Ghostbusters, we don't hate men.
Yes.
Ghostbusters.
If you didn't have DVD and streaming and cable television, that's what they would do. They would re-release it again and go, no, men, we love you.
No, men, we think you're great.
And they'd have new footage added in and try to recoup their losses.
We're going
to
hide Paul Feig from the press.
Yes.
We're going to act like he's not a raging male feminist.
Yeah, the last time I remember them doing that was there was a Danny DeVito comedy where he was like a drill sergeant and Mark Wahlberg was one of the recruits. And they released it. I don't remember the title. They released it once. It flopped.
Operation Dumbo Drop, that's what it was.
Nah, it should have been. But no, it was like Sergeant something. No,
Operation
or
Dumbo Drop had Mel Gibson, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, that had. It was supposed to have Mel Gibson. It ended up having
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover and Dennis Leary.
No, Mel Gibson was in Air America.
Yeah, he was in Operation Dumbo Drop.
I was confused
with another like positive Vietnam movie.
Yeah, Vietnam set film that wasn't really.
The Passion of the Dumbo Drop. Yeah.
but no, so then they
sequel to from the greatest filmmaker of our time, Mel Gibson. We're getting a new movie from him soon and a sequel to Passion. So well, Mel's back, baby.
They re-released this Danny DeVito comedy with a different title in some markets like Seattle. And I think it still flopped, but they gave it a complete title change like a few weeks later and tried again and it bombed again. So, you know, that's the last time I heard of them trying to recoup loss on a flop.
It was known as a Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles.
Yeah.
Could have called it that.
And, you know, they kind of do that a little bit on DVD.
You know,
like, what was it?
Edge of Tomorrow.
Tomorrow was called, it said Live, Die, Repeat.
On the DVD.
Edge of Tomorrow in little letters at the bottom. But like, what was it? The Ghostbusters Blu-ray, it's called like Ghostbusters, I don't know, it has some colon subheading on it.
Yeah.
So Ghostbusters 4 annoying.
Yeah, so they're like,
four
oh, well, maybe
if, cunts, that's what it's called.
Maybe if people think it's not a remake, they'll go see it, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe if people think it's not, you know, ruining their childhood, they'll go see it.
That's what they should subtitle it, Ghostbusters Ruining Your Childhood. It'd probably sell better. Otherwise, call it Four Holes.
Ruining Your Childhood One Bitch at a Time.
Yeah.
Cuckbusters.
Oh, yeah. That's what it should have been called.
But this movie, it's Roy Scheider. There's another shark on the loose. He says there's a Brody's going to...
There's not another shark on the loose. There's a shark!
There's a shark! No fire, cyan, arsenic-laced bullets into the water. He was trying to convince the mayor and all of them that there's another shark on the loose, and the mayor, who has a very short memory, is like, what are you talking about, Brody? We got to have these beaches open.
Yeah, like Michael Myers with a Sheriff Lee Brackett.
I know, they're all like, we can't have a panic right now.
It's Halloween.
Halloween. There's nothing going on.
Kids go to drugstores and buy candy. It's like, geez.
I shot him 6 times. No man can take that many bullets. It's like, whatever. Yeah.
But what's funny is this was based on, this is one of those movies that was started with another director and a screenwriter, and was later, they fired the director and replaced half the cast after like a month of filming. So it has an interesting history. They'd originally gotten this John D. Hancock guy who had directed Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Which is a good movie.
Yeah, and he and his wife
banged the drum slowly, too.
Right. He was an acclaimed director, and he and his wife had rewritten Howard Sackler's screenplay. Howard Sackler was uncredited on the first Jaws and is said to be the guy who wrote the Robert Shaw's big speech in the film.
Oh, yeah, that's like the big debate. Who wrote – was it John Milius?
Yeah, it's like there's this dispute whether it was Sackler or Milius. But Sackler did work on the first Jaws script, and so he wrote Jaws 2 in his screenplay. And then in the Hancock Dorothy Tristan rewrite, they had it where Amity was like a ghost town. Like the first shark attacks had just destroyed the economy, and the mayor was making like a deal with the mob or something, or getting mob money into the town to like build condos and revitalize the town. And that was one of the reasons they really didn't want you to know about the shark coming back. And the shark was like, I'm reading the novelization that Hank Searles wrote, which was a bestseller, believe it or not, in 78. And it's based on the first script. And in that script, the shark is like pregnant. It's a pregnant female shark. And so it's huge. And it's really, I think Dorothy Tristan said it was supposed to be the mate of the first shark, you know, the first great white in the first film that they killed. But there's some cool stuff in the book where like one of the guys who sees the shark thinks Brody lied about killing the shark in the first movie.
Really?
Like he's like, oh, Brody lied and the shark's still alive. He claimed he killed it. You know, there's that sort of confusion in the book. There's also the whole mafia thing. I don't think would have worked at all. But anyway, Hancock had problems because I think he, there's various stories about why he was fired. You hear that Universal didn't like the rushes. He was making this dark, moody film. Like
they also thought it was irritating how on all his contracts he signed it really big.
Yeah, it was like he was real boastful about that. But but also I heard the one story that's on IMDb that I think is close to the truth. And I did read The Making of Jaws 2, and it didn't have a clear focus on what exactly did it. But on the IMDb, it says that Hancock fired an actress who was dating a Universal executive at the time.
Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah, and
I've read Harlan Ellison stories. That'll do it.
That rung true, and that's probably what did it. And I don't know if that was the actress Sarah Holcomb, who was in Animal House, and she was later in Caddyshack, and she kind of flipped out because she had actual schizophrenia and had to drop out of the movie business.
Hmm.
And she had all this potential, but she was a young actress, but she was partying with the National Lampoon guys and
that'll
the
do
SNL.
It.
Oh, they were like,
let's make a movie, Jaws 3, People Nil.
Yeah, I think she was going to be in that. Like there were plans for her to be in that, and so she had to drop out of the business because she had mental problems and fell into drugs pretty bad.
Which happens.
Yeah, and she dropped out of the film business. And but she Ricky Schroeder was part of the original cast as the youngest Brody kid, and so he was fired when they fired Hancock. And so they replaced half the cast. Jennet Swartz came in and with the new cast for the kids, mainly. Roy Scheider was just sitting there collecting money. He had signed to do this film just to get out of his contract with Universal because they allowed this to count as two films on his contract because he wanted to jump and do something else, you know, work with other studios.
He was meant to be on Sorcerer. No, not Sorcerer. Yeah, well, D-Hunter, sorry.
He had made Sorcerer. That had flopped. He was going to do Deer Hunter, and he left the Deer Hunter project. He didn't want to do it. Like, he didn't like the script or something. Something about the script didn't.
He went and did Jaws 2 instead.
This guy's going deer hunting with a pistol. What is this?
What it was is he owed Universal two more movies, and Universal was like, if you do Jaws 2, we'll let you out of your contract. We'll release you.
So
and
obviously he was like, a piece of shit.
And he was being paid a pile of money, so he was like, okay. And so he was supposedly in the early days when he was working with Hancock, like Hancock yelled at one of the child actors, and Roy Scheider said to the kid, he goes, don't worry, kid, he's not going to be here that long. Because he was awesome. Seeing the way that Hancock was dealing with, like, I guess, Lorraine, what's her name, Lorraine Gray or Lorraine Geary, what's
Gary.
Her name who played the...
Gary.
Yeah,
Gary.
Yeah, who's Sid, she was Sid Sheinberg's wife, who was the president of Universal.
Look, you don't fuck with That guy is the most litigious asshole on the planet.
Right.
what was it? There was a big story because he's the guy who wanted to release his own cut of Brazil, right?
Yeah. Sid Sheinberg cut of Brazil.
So when the game Donkey Kong came out, he wanted to sue Nintendo, and he brought them like this giant lawsuit, and he was like, it's a really fascinating story to look up, but he was like going to take down Nintendo, but Nintendo like were like, no, we're not going to pay you. We're going to take you to, because the president of Nintendo at the time is one of the most hilariously ruthless business executives I've ever read about. And he actually took him to court, and they found out actually Universal had no claims to the copyright for Donkey Kong. So Universal ended up losing all this money over it.
Jeez. Yeah. Well, James Garner would sue Universal over Sid Sheinberg stuff and would win constantly. Yeah. And it's like he had there was a big lawsuit about profits and royalties from the Rockford Files in syndication. Garner sued them and won and got a massive payout. So it's like the Universal was a pretty ruthlessly, crazily run studio by Sheinberg.
But it's ruthless, but not like effective. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He wanted to do he was really bad at all this stuff. Like,
he was kind of like a classic of the dumb executive that didn't really know what he was doing.
Well, because this was when Nintendo was not like a powerful company. They were toy makers and they fucked him up. That was when Nintendo became like a really powerful company.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because they got Janet Schwartz, who had done Night Gallery with, you know, the same time as Steven Spielberg did. So they think, oh, we'll just get one of our TV directors to kind of cover this, because they had approached Spielberg and he was interested at one point, but he wanted to completely rewrite the script and do a completely different film. And they were like, no, you got to work with what the locations we've already secured and we've already done pre-production. It has to be close to this script. So they bring in Janet Schwartz, and he spends a lot of time working with the young cast, which pissed off Roy Scheider. And apparently at one point, Roy Scheider and Janet had a meeting, and Roy knocked him out. So,
God.
Yeah. Apparently all Roy Scheider did was between takes was sunbathe, which is ironic because later he died of cancer, basically caused too much sunbathing.
He always looked like he spent too much time in the sun.
He always did.
Like in The Punisher, like he looked like a, you know, his skin looked baked. He looked like a football. Perfect. I was trying to find the perfect analogy, and that's it.
And he was also exercising all the time. You know, he's always a wiry looking guy. He's always fit, like, you know, athletic and fit. So
I gotta say, even watching this movie, I was like, God, Roy Scheider really is one of my favorite leading guys, though. Like, I love all these 70s movies with him, even though, like, this isn't one of my favorites, but, like, you know, Sorcerer.
No, he gives us a good performance. It's a stunningly good performance.
It's a really good performance. Like, the movie's totally watchable because of him.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And you know, but like this, like All That Jazz, which is not a movie on paper I should like, but he's great in it. You know?
Yeah. It's like, and I was surprised, like that scene where he goes to the city council and he's trying to show them the photos, the diver's photo of the shark eating him and saying it's a shark. It's a great scene just because of his acting.
Yeah.
And like, and when he gets fired, like just the scenes with him and Lorraine Geary are just, they're good because he's just carrying it on. Like he's putting something into it.
He's like, I can't hack it. I haven't lost a job since I was 17.
He was great.
Nobody ever said I couldn't hack it.
Yeah.
She's
and it works.
That's what you are.
Yeah. And but so the funny thing is, so when Schwartz took over, they brought in Carl Gottlieb, who had also worked on the first Jaws. He rewrote the script a bit. I think he kind of improved it because what I've written the novelization, it's fun to read as a novelization, but if they had done this mafia subplot about, it just wouldn't have worked in the movie. It would have been
I like the stuff you said about the ghost town and like the
it's like,
because I was like, how's tourism this good after this insane thing that happened? But like, and it made me think of Let's Scare Jessica to Death when you said that. Right. I was like, that sounds like something Hancock would do, like have this sort of, you know, dead New England town. Like that sounds creepy, but when you add the mafia stuff in, it's like
It's funny because they filmed it in Destin, Florida, after doing some some second unit shots.
Which is a lovely place to vacation.
Yeah, Destin, Florida is beautiful and looks nothing like a New England coastal town.
Yeah, no, it looks nothing like it. In fact, nearby Destin is Seaside, where they filmed the Truman Show.
Yeah, and also in Destin they filmed Frogs, the Sam Elliott AIP frog monster.
Oh, really?
Yes, they filmed that there because Yeah, they found that.
Kill
there
these motherfucking frogs.
They still talk about it to this day. This is of course, this is where I sort of dox myself. Is I worked at the Destin Log, the newspaper of Destin, Florida, for about 6 months.
Oh shit!
Yep.
Oh shit! During
my time in journalism, yeah, I was their news reporter who wrote your beloved
career in journalism that you speak of.
Yeah, I wrote the entire front page and all the political and crime stuff.
My parents have a friend who has a phobia of frogs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
And so I went. There was her birthday, and they were like, "Oh, we don't know what to get her," and because they're Dallas people who love art and stuff, and so I went, "I know what to get her." And I gave them a copy of Frogs on DVD. And they went, "Oh, we're giving this to her." And they thought it was hilarious.
I still haven't seen it. I should.
I heard that like the frogs like basically started breeding in the area.
They might have. They still talk about it in Destin in 1996. They were like, "Oh, they need to film more movies here because the Truman Show was funny. That was filming, and I never saw this written up anywhere, but Dennis Hopper was originally in the film.
Really?
And then he was replaced by Ed Harris.
Yeah, I was about to say it must have been the Ed Harris role.
But that was never mentioned, but Dennis Hopper was in the film for a few months and then was fired and replaced by Ed Harris, and there's no mention of that in any write-ups on the film anywhere.
You know why? Because Dennis Hopper was in the film for a few months, got fired, and he didn't know any of it. He had no idea.
Yeah, I think it was a troubled shoot, but there were stories of Jim Carrey like going to Walmart at midnight because it was one of those super Walmarts that was open all night. So there were stories of Carrey going into Walmart doing his shopping at like 2 a.m.
Listening to Cannibal Corpse on his headphones.
Probably. They filmed that over in Seaside, which was a weird artificial town where all the buildings are pastel.
Oh, yeah, I've been there many times.
It's designed like a European village. I did a story out there on some charter school they had over there, and I remember walking around in the
Because you were working for the media, you were like, "Charter schools are evil."
No, I didn't even know what a charter school was. Shit, you know. I wasn't even political. I didn't even vote in the previous the election or anything.
You fucking normie.
Yeah, I know. Well, I thought journalists were supposed to be apolitical.
Oh my gosh. What a concept.
That is what they teach you in J school. You're not supposed to have a position. I see that violated all the time.
Gee, they threw that one out the window, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, it does not apply at all.
We have Soviet media now.
Oh, no, it's crazy. Pravda. Thanks, you know. But it's the Amity newspaper.
Yeah.
There's no shark in the water.
There's no shark in the water.
Right. But it's funny because I know Destin, Florida, and I've been to a few coastal towns, and it's just the difference is hilarious. And just seeing this is supposed to be Amity, and it's this bright sugar sand that you only find in Destin, Florida, and it's all bright looking, and everybody's healthy and lean, and they don't look like Yankees at all. And I'm just like, this Destin, Florida, obviously. But it kind of gives the movie a funny relevance to me. And obviously they're filming out in the Destin Bay with the fake Cable Junction Island or whatever they called it, which was actually a set they built in the water that was floating.
So they actually shot this on the water because, like, I remember Spielberg was saying the big mistake he made on Jaws was filming in the ocean.
Yeah, because he was probably thinking he should have filmed at the tank at Universal.
But being a young, idealistic kid, he was like, "I gotta shoot it on the ocean."
Right. But, here they filmed it in the Gulf of Mexico, which is much calmer than filming it in the ocean. So
that's true. That's true. If it's in the Gulf of Mexico, it's different.
And I think the town of Destin and Navarre, Florida, were willing to work with the filmmakers, and the fishing community there was helping them out and stuff. So, but it was the most expensive film Universal had ever produced.
So do you think this was the beginning when we started to see sequels that stopped the law of diminishing returns a la Planet of the Apes?
Yeah.
They started to dump more money into sequels because we thought more money, more profit.
Right, right. And it had to look like a big, slick film.
Yeah.
And it wasn't – because they actually had shark – robot sharks that worked this time, they didn't have to hide them in editing. So that's why you see a ton of the Bruce shark, you know, or whatever you want to call
it. You see a lot more of them, but I don't think it does the movie a lot of favors. Like he looks
not a ton, but it
looks like a big fake shark. I don't know.
Well, he always did, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, but like this jaws you, quick, you know.
But when you see what's funny is when you see sharks in the real world, they look big and fake.
That's true. They've
got dead eyes.
Yeah, yeah. They're big
eyes, fake, Dollar's
big
eyes.
Looking things. It's just they're you know, here they were able to get so much out of those shark props that I think it actually helps the movie a great deal when compared to what you see today, which is CGI crazy. Oh,
don't get me wrong. I would rather see these things than – but we – okay, like I recently watched In the Heart of the Sea. Did you guys see that?
No, I haven't seen it. No.
Not a bad movie. I actually will say out of movies I've seen recently, it's one of the better ones. As far as new movies go, it's a, you know, period drama, you know, an action period drama for adults.
Right.
So I will say that I give it a recommendation, but I was like, God, this movie would be better if it was made like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have all this CG and it kind of took me out of it at times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say like, the movie has a lot of pluses. Like, I would recommend it. In fact, I might want to do it on the show sometime. But one of the problems it has is watching that and Jaws 2 in close proximity is I much prefer seeing something in front of the camera.
Yeah. And they get some effective shark attack scenes out of this. Like, I was kind of surprised how well it held up just in terms of, like, obviously the thing was working better this time. And they were able to get more of the type of shots that you probably would have seen in the first Jaws if the, you know, the damn thing had worked.
Yes.
Didn't sink to the bottom of Martha's Vineyard. But but I mean, the scenes in here are pretty effective. And I remember a kid in my family, a cousin of mine, he was taken to see this at way too young age. I think he was 4 or 5. He's probably younger. He was younger than Stuart was when he saw this in 78. And man, he was terrified.
Yeah, it would have been my brother's age in 78.
Yeah, it scared the hell out of it. Like, he was really too young to see the movie.
And Jaws is one of those movies that the first one is one of those movies like these movies just they scare you out of the water. Like, that's
yeah.
They're just that effective. Like, even this is a total coincidence, but the other day my mom was telling me she came across Jaws on TV, and she said, she goes, I've seen the movie before. I hadn't seen it in a long time, and it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. That's creepy. You know?
Yeah.
I still have never seen it in a theater, and it does get a lot of revival screenings around here.
Well, the Alamo Drafthouse likes to do their, you know, they did that Jaws screening where it was like on a lake, you know, and you'd watch it and.
Yeah, yeah. They were doing that. Would you watch Jaws like that? I was like, yeah, I'd watch
Of course that. I'd fucking watch Jaws like that.
It's a goddamn movie. Yeah, it's like, I'm not afraid of the water, though. Like,
unless it was Disney World.
Yeah.
You know?
And, yeah, Disney
can be. And I might not.
Screw Disney.
Might get hauled off by
fucking Rock. Fucking alligators in their goddamn water. It's like, oh jeez. Oh well, they should have read the signs. But it's funny because the scenes in here are super effective. Some of the young actors kind of overdo it.
Yeah,
but I just blame that on the inexperience of young actors. Also, but what I noticed was that slasher films were more, I think, more inspired by this film than Halloween.
Oh, there's a ton of like, I was noticing that when I was watching it. I was like, there's a ton of like kind of young TNA shots. Like,
yeah.
See a lot of shots of girls' butts. You didn't see that in the first Jaws.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
You saw a lot of like, you know, girls in short shorts, like the kind of shorts you'd see in Friday the 13th
part 10. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And like lots of young guys like looking at girls going like, oh man, I'd like to date her, you know, like, and
yeah.
And the one kid who looks like Napoleon
like a sparrow.
Dynamite was my favorite.
Yeah, that's like a sparrow.
Yeah, they were like, "Tits like a sparrow." Yeah, they're like sizing up the girls and hanging out with the girls. And but I love that one of the teenagers looks exactly like Napoleon Dynamite. It was great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But what I noticed was those kids, I thought, or the young actors, there was more to those characters than you usually see in those films, because by the time you get to the Friday the 13th films, they don't really act like teenagers. And they acted like, you know, a bunch of high school students hanging out.
Yeah.
And also there's certain scenes hit me as more real, like when the youngest Brody gets saved, and he's not saved by his brother, he's saved by one of the other teens, like the guy with the curly hair like hugs him, like, "I saved your life." Like, that looked real.
And, you know, there was another scene that was totally seemed like a teenager-ish interaction, and that was when I think it's Keith Gordon's talking to Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
And he's going like, "Hey, you know, that girl was looking at you." And he's like, "No, she wasn't." And he's like,
yeah.
And he's like, she wouldn't look at me. I'm spinning. And he goes, "Yeah, you know what? I don't think she was." You know, like, it just had these like guys like trying to support each other, but then going, "You know what? Fuck you."
And a lot of that, it was probably because they were encouraged to hang out together, go sailing together before they started filming. And I mean, I think at least maybe 75% of them were part of the Hancock shoot that was ankled. And that was, you know, they had been through all that stuff before. And so I think there was some real camaraderie there. So I thought that came off well. I mean, Donna Wilkes really overdid it in her screaming scenes. Like a friend of mine called her wobbly cheeks. But yeah. She overdid it a bit, but I mean, you know, with some of those scenes, it's like they hadn't really been done on film before with teenagers, like looking that realistic. And one scene where Brody and his wife find that hysterical girl on the boat after her boyfriend was eaten by the shark.
Yeah,
that reminded me of the scene in Mad Max where they came upon the rape victim in the that the biker. It's like, I don't know if it was very similar. So I was like, wow, I wonder if George Miller had saw this before he started filming Mad Max. So,
of course he did. He's like a thieving prick.
But yeah, there's I was surprised. There some things in this movie, you know, I wouldn't have noticed them in 79 being a kid watching this. And but the stuff I appreciate about it now, I'm like, okay, there's a lot here that I don't think people are really aware of. It's like, but totally the Friday the 13th films ripped off that whole teens in danger thing. Because that's not in Halloween, that type of camaraderie.
Yeah, and that was the thing that was different about this movie. Because the first Jaws, because if you know, watching this, I was kind of like, well, it's kind of a remake of the first Jaws. You know, we're the town that we have Amity, and then Chief Brody is trying to warn people, and everybody thinks he's crazy.
Yeah.
And but the first Jaws was about three adults from different backgrounds coming together to stop this threat to the town.
Yeah. But also you have those great scenes of Robert Shaw completely berating Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
college boy, soft hands from counting money.
Yeah, exactly. They're three totally different dudes with totally different viewpoints and outlooks that have to come together and, you know, fight the shark. This movie has much more of a teenage focus.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, thinking about I hadn't really looked at it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
I was thinking that my favorite scenes in the movie were the teen scenes, not the Brody stuff. I mean, I love Roy Scheider.
Yeah.
I love him. You know, I can watch him do anything. But plot wise, I was like, okay, I saw this in the first movie, like him trying to warn the bear
plus
and
he
stuff.
Didn't have Robert Shaw and Richard Dreyfuss to bounce.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You can tell he looked a bit lost because he didn't have those guys around, or at least Dreyfuss, you know, because Robert.
But
Shaw
I thought he did a good job carrying it. It's just I saw it in the first movie.
Yeah,
but with these other two guys, and the stuff with the teens though felt really fresh. It felt authentic.
Yeah,
and it's like you know, John pointing that out. I'm like, okay, I appreciate this movie a lot more.
Yeah, and that's what surprised me when I watched it, because I didn't expect it. I was like, wow, they really – this is like a real group of teenagers being terrorized by a shark.
Yeah, it is a decent sequel, you know, for sure.
I'm looking at the numbers here, by the way. John's saying it was a hit. Budget $20 million, box office $187 to $208. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think it was the most successful movie Universal had released.
That is money.
For a while.
That is money hand over fist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
No, it was a massive hit, and you know it influenced all those slasher films. And, you know, producers always mine these films for formulas. Like Halloween is very inspired by Carrey and Black Christmas, and you know, it's because the producer saw those films and said, okay, if I can combine Carrey and Black Christmas, I've got a hit.
And well, you know, and I was thinking about too, like, I've seen interviews with horror directors who have said Jaws 2 was a big influence on them.
Really? Yeah. I haven't seen those. That's interesting.
Yeah, like,
but yeah, it was a big enough hit to be an influence.
Some of them are some more indie guys, like, but yeah, I was thinking about that, how I saw some horror directors saying, like, this was years ago, but saying that Jaws 2 was a huge influence on them. And now that I watch it, I'm like, yeah, I see that.
Have any of you guys seen Orca the Killer Whale?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
It's a knockoff of Jaws.
Yeah, it's like Grizzly.
It totally is a knockoff.
Yeah, except it was Dino De Laurentiis pouring tons of cash into it. And Richard Harris.
Yeah, just drunk as a skunk on the whole film.
Is Charlotte Rampling is like the love interest.
Yeah. Oh my!
It's got Bo Derek.
It's got some disturbing scenes of like a pregnant orca being killed, which inspires the male orca to go on a revenge rampage. But then it's got these scenes of Dreyfus like in the ice, yelling, "Come get your bloody whale!" You know, and it's hysterical. And in other aspects, it's totally played serious. The Ennio Morricone score is fantastic, and it's just like this complete abomination of cinema, but it's like hard to hate. But yet this movie had a slam at it because a orca has been chewed up by the shark and spit out under the beach.
Yeah, that's
in,
right.
In the film, and that was a middle finger at orca.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I brought up Orca the Killer Whale because of the whale.
Yeah, that was totally intentional. That was a total slam at orca. And because Orca was promoted like crazy in 77, like there were I always joke. I said on the back of all the Marvel comics I had in 1977, there were ads for Orca. There were no ads for Star Wars. There was just ads for Orca constantly. They promoted the hell out of it.
Yeah.
They were even thinking of doing King Kong versus Orca at one point because Dino had the rights to
Kong.
Yes.
King Kong versus Orca.
Luckily, we avoided that. But I think Orca was kind of a flop and became more famous on its CBS.
I think that was one that was in the Golden Turkey Awards.
Yeah, I believe it was because, you know, although if you've ever read that, it's kind of weird what those guys consider a bad movie.
I get rustled when I read the Golden Turkey Awards. Like, they pick on movies where I'm like, really? Like, they say Ed Wood, worst director of all time. No, Plan 9 from Outer Space is not the worst movie of all time.
It's not at all.
Plan 9 is a lot of fun to watch. I love it.
It is. It's yeah. Ed Wood movies are a blast. I'm sorry.
No need to be sorry at all. I mean,
no, I'm not. In fact, I regretted saying I'm sorry when that came out of my mouth.
Yeah.
But his movies have passion. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's just to me, the worst movies are boring movies.
Absolutely. The worst movies are movies like when people say Manos, the Hands of Fate's one of the worst movies of all time. Yes. That movie is boring
as
fuck.
Shit, yeah, it's boring as all heck, yeah.
Now, it's interesting as a story because it's one of these weird regional things, you know? But that movie's unwatchable on its own.
It is.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why when I saw that Manos was getting did it get a Blu-ray release? I think it did, didn't it?
It got a remastered Blu-ray release.
I remember reading when it was first announced, on Blu-ray.com, people were going, oh my God, day one, I can't wait. I thought, are you for real?
Okay, I will say I have seen it.
Mm.
And it's, you know, it's interesting to watch because it looks completely different, but it's still unwatchable.
No, I'm talking about in the terms of, as a film, it's a shit movie.
Oh, it's a piece of garbage.
Yeah, I'm not saying people – I can't believe – and I'm going to take a dig at some of the people on Blu-ray.com. They're just – I call them the day oneers. Everything's like day one. Oh, my God.
It's definitely not that.
Fuck me, really. Day one for everything. I thought, well, obviously you have no family and you have no life or both. Okay, if you don't have kids and a wife, I get it. That's cool, you know. But for fuck's sake, here's a dollar. Go buy a life somewhere along the way.
Yeah, I know.
Not everything's about buying. Like today, I was reading about the Asphalt Jungle was getting released from Criterion. One guy's like, "This has just made my life." I'm like, "Oh, for fuck's sake!"
No.
Really?
People,
I mean,
people,
really, you know?
Really? I mean, it's like if someone said to me, "Look, Stuart Shout Factory's going to release When You Come Back, Red Rider," I'd be rapt, but I wouldn't be like, "Oh, this is the greatest day of my life." I'd be like, "Wow, can't wait!" But yeah, you got to live on a bit, in the meantime. Just
yeah, I always laugh when everybody goes crazy for something like Asphalt Jungle, and I'm like, okay, I love old noir movies. I watch them all the time,
sure, but
it's not a big friggin' deal when one comes out remastered. It's just not. It can wait. You know, it can wait for the Criterion sale at Barnes & Noble, you know? It's just like that. No rush to see it because it's like, all right, it's just going to look a bit sharper, but you don't – nobody watches those movies like, oh, I watch it every week. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
It's like they're like something you watch once every couple of years.
I mean, I did watch I did have the – sorry, Hunter. I got the Criterion – well, it's not the Criterion, but it's the Australian arm of Criterion here that sourced it from them of The Beatles, A Hard Day's Night on Blu-ray. Looks stunning, but – as John said, it's not something I'm going to watch every week. It's something I'll pop on every couple of years.
Well, and like if you're a person who buys a lot of movies like us, you've probably got a big backlog of shit to watch.
Yeah, I do.
Unless it's something that like I would nudge to the top, I'm not a day one person, you know.
Yeah, it would depend with me. Price, obviously, is a big factor.
Of course.
But like, for instance, I think the last thing I did buy day one was literally day one was the Paul McCartney and Wings Rock Show Blu-ray because I wanted that because that was just
it's
as rare as rock and horse shit to find for decades. Like then you got a VHS release and that was it, and you couldn't. And good luck trying to find that. So when they came out, Blu-ray, really scarce. And the one they released on Blu-ray was all remastered with a high LPCM sound, which means nothing to people except if you're an audiophile like me. Extra 30 minutes to put back into the concert. And it was priced right. It was like $20 on Blu-ray with a book. I'm like, okay, I've got to have this straight away. So, yeah, that was the rare exception of me for a day one. But, you know, like I got Paul Blart 2 on Blu-ray. I picked it up for $8. I picked it up for $8. That was not a day one. That was like, okay, I know that's going to come down to the 2-for-20 sale at JB Hi-Fi sometime. And I'll wait. So,
yeah, that was me with another classic Adam Sandler sequel, Grown Ups 2.
Wow, you bought that. Okay, you laugh at me for Paul Blart too.
Hey, I'm not laughing, dude. Grown Ups 2, Grown Ups 1's a piece of shit. Grown Ups 2, masterpiece.
A bit like Walk of the Killer Whale.
Yeah.
Just on a side note, did you guys get the story last year of Mick Fanning, the Australian surfer?
No.
What happened to him in South Africa? In South Africa last year at Jeffreys Bay, he was at a surfing tournament, and he saw a fin in the water, and a shark was behind him. And to get away from the shark, he's punched it in the head twice and surfed off.
Oh, I heard about that. I did hear about that. Yeah, I didn't know.
I think I did hear about it.
Yeah.
Which is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, of course.
Of course you
just
do.
Just punch it in the face and leave.
Tell us a strange deal, like shark, fuck off, bang, bang, straight in the head. And got the hell out of there. And champion that Mick Fanning is, he went back to Jeffreys Bay the next year.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, some people would be traumatized. Oh, we're going back there, shark. But no.
Well, I do remember in the early 80s, there was a surfer in the San Francisco Bay of all places. Because I always figured the water's too cold for surfers, but I didn't realize they wore those scuba suits when they surfed. And this guy fell asleep on his board, and a great white ate him.
Really?
Yeah, they fell on the board and everything, and it's like he fell asleep on his surfboard. That was the assumption, and they said basically a shark got
him. How the fuck do you fall asleep on a surfboard?
That must be kind of peaceful, like lying down on the surfboard in the waves.
San Francisco.
It's not like it's a hammock. It's a surfboard. It's. I give up.
And then strangely, I know when the media needed a bunch of distraction stories, probably because some liberal was screwing up, they had a summer of sharks, and there were shark attacks in the Destin-Fort Walton area, and this is about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, right.
But I remember that pretty funny, but there was like a series of shark, just shark bites. I don't think anybody was killed, but there was a wave of shark. I guess the sharks had come in with the tide or something following a hurricane. And they had a really good summer, and there was a shark frenzy, and they had these really frightening helicopter shots where you could see the big sharks and the people like just half a mile away on the beach.
Oh, actually, while we're at it, can we please get a moratorium on the Sharknado movies? I've had enough.
I've never seen any of them. There was an Avalanche shark at Walmart the other day.
Yeah, I got sucked into the first one. I watched it. It was horrible. It was...
Yeah.
I was asking people, look, if you like it, you like it, but what am I missing? Because this is the most boring piece of shit I've seen.
It was just stupid.
I don't
those
like...
Those are like... They're like Love Boat or Fantasy Island or some shit. You know,
I don't like the intentionally bad B-movie stuff. I like
some of them, like Almighty Thor. It's terrible, but it's a lot of fun.
But the Asylum stuff is kind of retarded. But that one was like, hey, look at how it's a bad movie. Woo! You know,
Here's Debbie Gibson.
There's Mega
Piranha.
There's a ton
of cameos to die violently, and it's just made for this kind of shit tier geek stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
but some of them are enjoyable. Yeah, like Mega Piranha, I enjoyed. Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. I've got that on Blu-ray as well. That's a lot of fun. But Sharknado is just one where they've taken that film that was a sensation, you know, somehow, and just ridden with it. Like now, there's number 4 out. I thought,
funny because I remember a few years ago I had a couple of free tickets from a Groupon that was expiring, and so I called up my brother and said, you want to go see Shark Night in 3D? And we went to see that.
Yeah.
And it's not really a good film. It's got some unintentionally stupid stuff, and then it's got some intentionally stupid stuff, so it's kind of more enjoyable than your Sci-Fi Channel type of thing. I mean, it has an attractive girls in the cast, that helps, but I was thinking back on it, I'm like, yeah, you know, they didn't seem like teenagers that would actually be hanging out together. Yeah. It's like, you know, like they do in Jaws 2, but I do remember that the black guy was one of the first to die. He like gets bitten, then he grabs like a harpoon and says, you know what they say in my neighborhood, take one of us, we gotta take one of yours. And it's like this, oh no, he has to have ghetto roots, you know, so he's gonna take all the sharks gangster style. Of course he gets eaten. But it had a lot of stupid illogical stuff in it, and Hunter would be delighted to know that John Nolte praised it in one of his last movie reviews for Breitbart.
Oh, Yvay.
you know who needed to be in that movie? Hunter? Busta Rhymes.
Of course.
Why is a killer shark?
He's a killer shark! There you go.
He could have used Busta Rhymes instead of a young teen actor who had to play the ghetto roots guy, you know. Because you can't have a black character without ghetto roots. You know?
Of course not.
I'm going to give props.
You gotta have a gang past.
Actually, just while we get off topic for 2 seconds, I'm going to give props out to a person I thought I would never. Lil Wayne. Did you see what he said the other day?
No, what'd he say?
He was saying about, oh, you know, all these people being offended for black people. He goes, I'm not offended by any of these things that people say, so why are you? Yeah, people like the Black Lives Matter movies. Like, I'm not offended by it, so why are you?
Because you're not educated, sir.
Yeah.
Like, Lil Wayne looks like he's
fucked. As to why you should be. I'm going to be offended for you because you're not smart like me.
Yeah.
Well, then everybody else will be, Lil Wayne's a fool, you know, because he's not down with any movement. So
you fool.
Yeah. You can't have your own opinion, apparently.
All he cares about is coke and bitches.
It's the herd. It's the herd thought that gets so tiresome.
I will say that Lil Wayne has an anti-abortion rap song.
Does he?
Yes, he does.
Oh wow!
It's called like "You Forgot How to Love" or something.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and it has a music video and everything. That's like got a plot.
Wow!
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a little surprised.
Yeah, it's like about a woman who has an abortion, and then she goes, and then like there's the alternative reality where she has her kid, and like, you know, brings a life into the world.
so it's like a Carmen music video or something.
Yeah, you know? it's really weird. Like I remember that coming. I'd be like, what?
What? I gotta go look at this later on.
yeah. You gotta look it up.
That's a surprise. Wow.
Yeah, so I just thought I'd bring that up. I thought that was pretty cool from the speak out. Yeah.
Well, that's it. I'll have to go look at it. I'm sure there's video clips all over YouTube. People dissing him.
Yeah. Middle class people dissing him.
Telling
him he doesn't understand black people.
Because like, they're listening to Wu-Tang and donating money to Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Which did nothing for the Louisiana flooding victims.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, many of them were not white.
Movement. Oh, don't get me started on that shit.
Right.
It's funny when Milo says Black Lives Matter. It just makes me laugh. It's like, Black Lives Matter is a joke. cracks me up every time it says.
Did any of you hear his interview with the guy who wrote the trolling article?
Joel Stein. Yeah. We talked about it last week.
Oh, yes, I did hear that.
Okay, did we talk about that on the show?
It might have been on or off air. I can't remember. It was one or the other. I think it was off air.
I don't know.
Spoke about it.
But it's amazing.
It was just.
Like, it was just fucking total roast.
This Stein got owned. He got absolutely owned by Milo. It was fantastic. But the thing was, credit to Stein, he managed to keep a civil tongue and not get fired up or angry or, you know, he was...
No. It was actually pretty civil. I mean, Milo was, you know, but I think he knew what he was getting into. Like, Joel knew he was going on there to get grilled. And
yeah.
So there was no, like, oh my God, you treated me like shit. He knew what he was going there to do. He was going there to defend his peace, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't agree with anything that Stein said. I thought it was just completely stupid. But, you know, the fact that they managed to just not have that Stein guy get up and get butt hurt and just walk out and say, oh, this interview.
Yeah, no, he's, I mean, obviously he's a smart guy. He's there. He was there to defend his peace and, you know.
But boy, I'll tell you what, the left could use a lot more people like him with his attitude anyway.
Yeah.
But,
it's like, one thing his piece was ignorant of is like, trolls have always owned the internet.
Yeah. I mean, they've been around. I remember the first time I got trolled.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, I was in high school and I was on a BBS board and what the fuck is that?
Big Black?
That's a BBS. That's like old school forums. You know, before social media, you had those BBS forums. And it's like 4chan was a BBS.
Oh, God.
But like, I was on one of those, and these people just like ate me for dinner. Like, they were just like, you know, they just kicked the shit out of me, and I got so mad, and I kept responding and like fighting them, and then once I kind of accepted defeat, they were all really nice to me. I kind of got it, I was like, that's kind of what they do to noobs around here. They treat them like shit, you know.
first time I got trolled was by a guy with a handle called 10 foot bong. I'm like, I don't need this shit. I was like, yeah, whatever. Well, fuck off.
Well, this was like full on, like, we're all gonna just fucking make fun of you. Like, this was the whole community.
Well, you didn't have the foresight to say, switch it off, I'm out of here.
No, I was like a teenager. I was like, fuck you guys. You
rebellious youth.
You know, yeah, I got mad, you know, I which is exactly what they want, you know, so I fed into it.
It's called baiting.
It's, yeah, they got me with the bants, you know.
Which is a good segue back to Jaws 2 with the bait.
Yeah, so what do we want to give it rate-wise?
One and a half for me.
One and a half?
No. It was a 7. It was pretty good still. Like, I enjoyed it. As good as Jaws, no, obviously. But as a sequel, it was perfectly fine. I'd say the hell of a lot worse sequels than this one.
You know what I was thinking would be odd is if there was no Jaws and there was just this, would it be a better remembered movie?
I don't think it would exist, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't exist, obviously.
No, it wouldn't exist. I mean, no.
I don't know. This movie kind of depends on the first movie, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a true sequel in that aspect that it could not exist without the first movie. But if this were a movie and let's say Jaws was never made and this was made, I think it'd be remembered as one of the great scare films of the 70s.
I think you're probably right. I don't think it would be remembered the way Jaws is remembered.
No, not at all. Not even close.
Because Jaws is a classic film, you know.
Yeah. Jaws is Spielberg and, you know, young.
Top Gear.
Top notch, ready to go. Dreyfus, Shaw, and Scheider. I mean, you know, it's hard to beat. But this film, like, when I watch it now, I was really surprised. I can forgive the Netflix remastering for showing me the crane underneath the shark.
Yeah,
in one scene that's very obvious. You can see a white crane kind of guiding the shark by a boat, you know, in one of those really good, otherwise very good overhead shots.
Oh, the pitfalls of remastering.
Yeah, things you were never meant to see. But I give it at least a 6.5.
Yeah, I was going to give it a 6. But, you know, John talking about a movie, talking about it kind of gave me some perspective. I think I want to give it a 7.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to give it a 6. Now I think I'm going 7 because I think John kind of, you know, shined a little light on some of the stuff. And I was like, oh, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's some highlights.
The parts
there
of the movie I really like. You know?
And I think also that we've been so conditioned to so many just cynical, like, my memories of 80s sequels are never good.
Yeah.
It's just cynical cash ins, Friday the 13th, this, and Halloween, that. And it's just like, it's so many of them. And they were just rehashing the film.
And I did really like I loved the teenage interactions. Like, I was thinking about that when you said that. I was like, you know what? I did like that part of the movie a lot.
Well, it wasn't cynical.
Yeah.
You watch those Friday the 13th films, they're cynical as hell. Yeah. You don't care if those kids get slaughtered.
No, all they are like, hey, when are we going to fuck?
Yeah, let's smoke some weed.
Yeah.
You know, because it's producers going, what do teens want to see? They want to see people doing illicit.
Exactly.
Shit.
Everything was designed by marketing. It's like, oh, they want to see, you know, girls with silicone implants, and they want weed scenes and scenes where they're, you know, screwing in a pickup truck or whatever the hell, and they get speared by Jason. It just gets, it's all designed by marketing.
Yeah. They designed it to actually root for Jason. They wanted the teens to be, you know, bumped off.
Yeah. It's totally, yeah. We want to see better looking people than us get killed. That's basically what those movies are.
That's right. That's why those Friday the 13th from, I mean, I like part 3 for its dumbness, but you know, truly from part 4 onwards, they're just cookie cutter, boring.
Oh yeah, they're all the same. You can detect all the beats. They're safe, predictable entertainment. Those were what I called horror movies for cheerleaders, because. Mm. Kids in school who didn't watch horror films otherwise would go see those on opening night, and they think, okay, that's a horror film.
The only real sort of curveball they threw was when they took Jason out of Crystal Lake and put him in Manhattan. I thought that was a good idea, but the film itself in the end was pretty dumb. It could have been a hell of a lot better.
I watched it one time on cable when I had the flu, and it was pretty bad. Could have been PG. I mean, they wouldn't allow them to have any gore in those films at that time. Cause
I think a lot of them got tampered with, where there was a lot of gore cut out. I know part 4 is notorious for being heavily cut.
Yeah, because only kids were going to see them. They weren't seen by adults. Adults don't care about those films.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
You know, not even back then. They didn't give it. They might have seen the first one. That was a big adult thing, seeing the R-rated horror films. But you could tell around 82, horror films started to get real juvenile. Like, they were just made for high school kids. That was it.
Yeah. Well, even for part 2 onwards for Friday the 13th, it just became a lot of head-scratching questions. Like, why is this happening? For instance, how the fuck did Jason track down that girl who survived the end of part 1? What, he took a plane? Right. that's ridiculous.
Why is he invincible? That wasn't explained. You know, I think
when did Jason become supernatural was the big question.
Right. He's like Superman.
Oh, they didn't care. They just made shit up as they went along.
Yeah they didn't give a. It was just like, well, Michael Myers got up after 6 shots, so Jason is, you know, you do all sorts of shit.
Yeah, and with Michael Myers, it had a cool, like, sort of freaky, unexplained, like, weird fiction element to it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, granted, the sequels did all they could to ruin that, but...
Yeah, the sequels destroyed everything that was built up in the first movie.
Yeah.
Well, Halloween 2 is just... As much as I loved it for years and years, when I looked at it with a different set of eyes or different perspective, oh, God, that's a bad movie.
Where Michael Myers is suddenly a foot taller.
Yeah. And Jamie Lee Curtis is wearing a wig.
Oh, the horrible wig, yeah.
And all the lifts from, like, Argento movies and stuff. That thing is so tiresome.
No, we're going to spend some time with a cop.
And it's cynical. It's like the one thing I liked about Jaws 2 probably wasn't made for the best of intentions. It was made to make money.
Of course.
But at no time in the film do I feel I'm given it was made with a cynical attitude. Halloween 2 was made with a very cynical attitude, also from our good friends at Universal Studios. They produced that, and that's a very cynical film. Very spiteful of the audience and very kind of – there's a sense of hate. I mean, it didn't help that John Carpenter was adding all these gory scenes to Rick Rosenthal's cut, but I don't think the movie would have mattered either way.
No.
I mean, it's a bad film. But Jaws 2 is – free of cynicism, despite being made for the, you know, pure greed. But I was surprised how much I enjoyed it.
I bet you Spielberg wishes he had made Jaws 2 instead of 1941.
He did. He actually, I think he had said a few times he kind of regretted he didn't do Jaws 2. I don't think he wanted to mess around with mechanical sharks again.
Yeah, probably the experience of making Jaws wasn't something he wanted to
repeat.
Yeah, probably right. not, but still.
The success would have been nice,
the
but not
the success part is what I'm talking about, yeah.
The agony before the ecstasy is, you know.
But, yeah, I mean, otherwise I'd still recommend it.
Yeah, I think I should recommend people watch it. It has 1 star on Netflix, which is complete horseshit.
Oh, that's – yeah.
That's just fucking retarded horror fans downvoting it. You know, that's all it is. You know, it's just like IMDb.
that came from the ghost of Roy Scheider.
Yeah. Well, he made a ton of money off that. Yeah. Bought his home in Arkansas, I'm sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I'd recommend picking up the Blu-ray of it, which got released back in June. So – 3 months back.
And probably the same transfer that's on Netflix, too.
Yeah, I think it is. And it comes all the bonus features off the DVD from the 2001 release, I think it was. And if you have got the 3D capability, get Jaws 3. Because, again, not a great film, but the 3D in it is outstanding. But don't get Jaws Revenge because it's a pile of shit.
Well, the funny thing is, Donna Wilkes in Jaws 2 later went on to do Angel. High School Student by Day.
I remember that movie.
Cooker at Night. Yeah, I remember it.
That was
one of her last big roles.
Wasn't a bad movie. Also, Angel yeah, 2 and Vengeance, Vengeance Angel.
Was recast with Betsy Russell.
Yeah.
But she's also in the disco episode of The Incredible Hulk, so.
Okay. I think on that point
with her wobbly cheeks, but. I think that's where Hulk raids a disco, stomping through Ferrigno in slow motion. knocks down a glitter ball, you know.
That's still as good as when the Incredible Hulk gets his ass whacked on with a wooden spoon by that old Chinese lady in that episode. I can't remember what it's called. He's ripping through Chinatown and he busts through some room in some old lady.
Oh, I have seen that. Yeah. There's also one where he attacks a bodybuilding show. And Ken Waller is one of the is the evil bodybuilding competitor.
Oh, really?
Lou Ferrigno is playing himself and interacting with the Hulk, you know, through split screen.
I wonder if that's a sort of nod to Pumping Iron, John.
It was. I think it was. And, of course, those were all the bodybuilders at the time. But, yeah, there is that episode.
Did it have the Hulk finding Mike Katz's T-shirt?
That would have been great.
Oh, that would have been.
I would have called that the greatest TV show episode of anything.
If the Hulk had found a T-shirt and just, like, threw it out the window or something, it would have been... Yeah,
awesome. That would have immediately shot it past all the Prisoner episodes.
Ah, by the way, that's getting a Blu-ray release here, you know?
Oh, it is?
The complete series of The Prisoner. Just real quick, what else is coming out? And I know we don't really do this thing, but this is important to me. It came from outer space. 2D and 3D Blu-ray. Amazon UK, $7.99 pre-order. What's that?
Oh, wow.
$20 all up with freight? That's probably. That's a must. I've got to have that.
That is a good movie.
It's a lot of fun to watch. I've never seen it in 3D, though.
I've seen it in a theater in 3D. Really fun.
Oh, really? Yeah, I've only ever seen it.
They did a midnight screening, one of those special retro screenings years ago, and I went to that.
Yeah. All right, well, let's wind it up, boys.
Yep.
All right.
Next week, Man in Black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello. No, it's not Mr. Ed.
I'm Danny DeVito.
Hello, I'm Mr. Ed. Next week's twice the size of Danny DeVito.
Yes, he is. No, there's that gag in Be Cool where he's like, Danny DeVito is going, I'm going to play Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
And then John Travolta goes, isn't Johnny Cash like really tall? He goes, you know, camera angles.
I'm surprised Travolta could talk in that movie with a mouth full of black cock.
Oh my God. Anyway.
So weird.
It's so weird. So, yeah, you could find us, midnightmoviecowboys.com. Email us, midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. If you have show ideas, feedback, whatevers, find our Facebook page, Midnight Movie Cowboys. Join our group. Join in on discussion. We're always shitposting in there. And
let us know. Anybody who's in the Facebook group, let us know, what are we doing that's like, guys, scale it back a bit. I'm just curious. That's all.
If you have any critiques.
Yeah, criticism pretty much. Don't be scared. No one's going to boot you out of the group, you know, unless you're completely venomous. But, I mean, really, if you've got any critiques, just let us know.
Yeah, sure.
Because I just fucking ride the SIG right out. I'm like, how far can I go?
Unless you call us level. Racist, in which case we're just going to be more racist. But if you like the show, please head over to iTunes. We're not going to ask for donations. Just go click like, 5 stars on Facebook. On iTunes.
We will be doing a paywall episode later in the year.
Yeah, sure. We'll do the paywall episodes that you can pay for. But as far as the supporting the show, all we ask is rate and review on iTunes. It helps us out.
It helps us out a bit. And also, you know what got a release, or what's getting a release tomorrow over there in the US, don't you?
What's that?
Yeah!
Oh, 31?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, fuck. Okay, John, I got to call Rodrigo Duterte because he's agreed to force you to go see it. So we can do it for the show.
I ain't seeing that shit.
No, if Rodrigo says you have to, you have to.
Garo will go see it. He can do a show with Garo. He'll go see it. He'll go see movies.
Yeah, he's got a countdown.
He
clock.
Knows he's going to hate something, and he still pays.
Garo will watch anything.
Garo
posts reviews on Facebook. He's like, I just saw this movie, and it's like, Garo, why the fuck would you watch that?
Dude, I used to do that to him on the phone before the internet. I was like, why the fuck did you? Why did you pay to see that? It's like, why did you pay to
like,
see
seriously,
that?
Like, seriously, Garo, every weekend, he just goes sees every new movie. That's what just so he can complain about it.
Yeah, he'll try to justify, oh, I snuck into that one.
Yes. Oh, good. I guess your time is worthless.
Yes.
It was funny he got interviewed for a Boston newspaper because he was one of the few people to see the interview at the time when all that shit was going down with Sony and the North Koreans about the emails.
I didn't see that.
Didn't you see that article?
I didn't see it either.
Oh. I may have forgotten. Oh, so much has happened since then in the podcasting world. It's easy to forget this stuff. Yeah, but it's like, not the first time he's been quoted in a newspaper. He used to get interviewed in the Boston papers quite a bit.
Oh, and Dangerous People's getting some traction in the festivals, which is good to know.
Yeah, he got booked in Upper New York Film Festival or something like that.
Very good.
I mean, we'll have to give an official announcement on the group or something. So
we'll
post. Yeah. You know, also, check us out at phantomsway.com.
Yeah, phantomsway.com.
Yeah, that's. I just want to say real quick, I want to thank everybody over at Phantom Sway, especially Jimmy, on behalf of us for, you know, hosting us every week and having the nuts to put up with our shit and our horrible comments and things that we say and still posting our shows and not coming back to us saying, oh, well, you know, can you cut this out so we can stick it on the site?
Yeah, they've never told us anything.
Never. Yeah, so a big thanks to Kira and especially Jimmy over there at Phantom Sway.
High energy. We like it.
I think Kara's working on her own movie podcast, probably inspired by us.
Oh, that's not a good idea.
hers is, I think she said it was like based on the idea, watching a movie from the 80s that could not be made today. Oh, it's just based on that concept. It's an interesting concept, so I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Yeah.
Yep, me too.
Yeah.
So. All right.
Yes. And with that, we'll say adios.
And Magadog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.